Welcome to the Senate Education and General Government Committee. As you might know, we have a pretty aggressive and ambitious agenda here today. Fortunately, all of these bills before us are very non-controversial and should not take any time. I do want to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 767. I know some of you are here interested in that one, and just to kind of give you a program idea of how this is going to play out today, we have a public hearing today, and we are going to hear from the people who signed up last time but didn't have enough time to testify, and I have their names here. And we have a couple of people who were invited testimony, and we have two amendments that are now in play, if you will. We have had a number of drafts at this, and it seems like every time we would do a draft, whether it's from a stakeholders group or from a work group or legislators, we miss the mark, and everyone that misses the mark and every bill that I've seen on virtual schools reminds me that we are trying to grapple here with five or six interconnected components that we don't have the time to deal with at this stage in the session. And I would much prefer a committee willing to go into a deliberate process that studies some of these issues and do what my daughter would call a timeout from some of these things and come back in a year and look at such issues as curriculum, funding, ADMW, how much it costs an online school versus a bricks-and-mortar school, what grades are appropriate, and those kinds of questions. And so to that end, I think what would serve Oregon best and bring more people together on this is to establish a work group that is called for in the Dash 11 amendment. And so to that end, if you testify today, it would be most helpful if you testified to that amendment, the Dash 11 amendment, which for the most part establishes a work group, calls a timeout, and asks us to look at a very new mode of education, and one that I hope the state will be thoughtful and deliberate and careful before we adopt these new policies on. So, Dana, can you give us an overview of the amendments we have before us, starting with the Dash 11?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The Dash 11 amendments carry forward some of the accountability and reporting requirements that were presented to us in Senate Bill 375, sponsored by Senator Walker. So you'll see some of those provisions there. I've provided that bill for you today at the dais as well. The Dash 11s require reporting requirements and requirements for virtual schools, which I've laid out in the background of your staff measure summary. It does establish a work group, as you mentioned, put together by the Senate President and the Speaker of the House. It specifies what the work group would consider, requires the work group to report to the next session of the 75th Legislative Assembly. And then it, as you mentioned, it imposes a timeout, or the word in the amendment is a moratorium, on the approval of charters that would become sponsors for virtual schools, on an increase in the number of students that receive online instruction in virtual schools as of the effective date of the act, and again, a moratorium on waivers of any provision of public charter school statute for virtual schools. And since you want to focus on those, maybe I'll just leave it at that. There is written information for committee members on the Dash 13s as well.
Any questions of Ms. Richardson, Senator Cruz?
Well, just a question, Mr. Chair. Because if we were aggressive in this work, there might be an opportunity to revisit the issue in the February session rather than wait 2 years. So
I believe that, isn't that what's in
the language from the amendment is that it requires a work group to report
the next session
of the legislature. So I think that is
okay, cool.
It's not a given when the 75th Assembly will
reconvene.
That's the intent. Okay, cool.
Other questions? All right, going down the list here from last week, if they are here, Bonita Vian, Alina Molina, Beatrix Newman, and Deidre Wilson. And we're going to stick with our time limits. And if you have written testimony, go ahead and hand it in, and you can summarize your statements. Thank you for coming.
No, come on. Maybe it's two at a time.
No, just speak one at a time. Otherwise,
that would be helpful.
You first. Hi, my name is Lily Shrink, and to summarize, I'm from Cottage Grove, Oregon, speaking in place of Benita because she could not attend the second session. So we may as well get to that part of it. I understand that the committee is considering establishing the work group. And while we would prefer the legislature to produce a framework now, we understand that that's a process that needs to undergo careful consideration. But if they are going to create a work group, I firmly believe that parents should have a role in that group. It's extremely difficult to be part of the process when the legislature is in session. I can't imagine how difficult it would be when we are not in session. I know myself, I've come down several times. I work full-time. I also am a home educating mother, and it makes it very difficult on our family to be able to continue to meet those needs when we don't even know when the sessions are going to be in or, you know, when we can participate. So I was wondering, will you commit, Chairman Haas, to create a spot on a group for a representative to our parent group, the Virtual Oregon Virtual Public School Alliance?
Well, I'm looking at the language here that sets up that group. And Dana, if you could,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, page 16 of the dash 11 outlines the membership of the work group. It includes representatives of teachers, administrators of public charter schools that provide online instruction.
But is there parents?
It doesn't specifically say parents. It doesn't rule them out in any of those categories. But your points are well taken.
Now I'll start my actual testimony. Chairman Haas, thank you for allowing us to be here to come before you and let our views be known. I have two children. My daughter Amanda is in the 7th grade, and my son Austin is a 5th grader. I'm here today as a parent of a virtual school student. I am strongly opposed to the recent legislation that would impose grade limits at which virtual schools can operate. Amanda is currently enrolled in a brick-and-mortar school, and she is doing quite well there. She likes the challenge of striving to be an honor roll student. My son, however, is quite different. We knew that enrolling Austin, who we believe to have mild Asperger's syndrome, in a traditional school was out of the question. He's too emotionally sensitive. He does not have the ability to distinguish when someone is just teasing him. He takes such things as a personal attack, and it will set him back for hours, sometimes days. His lack of fine motor skills make it a struggle to accomplish with any speed the volume of handwriting required in a traditional school setting. Having to sit still for even small blocks of time frustrates him. He does not do well in large group settings. Today, as we are sitting here, he would have been very anxious. In addition, he's very easily distracted. In short, the sum of all those normal expectations of a regular student would kill his ability to learn to his highest level. With my husband's illness and my working full-time, we knew that we needed a school that provided flexibility but also accountability. We decided to enroll him in a virtual public school. We found out about Oregon Virtual Academy, also known as ORVA. BARVA uses a multi-sensory learning approach that is based on mastery. Not only can my son not go at his pace, taking breaks as needed, sometimes 15 minutes between each subject where we do extra work, he can not only now go at his own pace, he is working hard, feeling confident, and he is excelling. Do we still have struggles? Of course we do. He's still the same boy, but now in addition to a nurturing learning environment that he can thrive in, we are ensured that all the state and federal requirements for his learning are being met. We are fortunate that we are able to be significantly involved with each of our kids and their teachers. Each is in a school that best meets their needs. I hope that the state legislatures do not decide to take away the choices that have allowed our family to succeed. I hope that the state legislatures do not take away the choices that have allowed each of my children to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today. You have my testimony in front of you, so I'll go ahead and move on to the amendments. It's extremely...
Go ahead and start with your name.
Elena Molina, that's my name, and I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I do wish that I could say not to close my daughter's school, but my daughter doesn't have a virtual school because she was denied access to ORVA by the Eugene 4J School District. And with that said, I'll move on to the Dash 11 amendment. As a parent who works full-time, among many others here, it's very difficult for us to get away and travel and participate in this process. We don't do this for a living. I lost half a day of work today and a full day last time to be here because it's very important to me. We don't make political contributions. The only way that we could be considered special interest is that we have the special interest of our children at heart. We want to be heard. We have a hard time being heard. With the idea of a working group, which I fully understand might be a necessity to get a good grip on a policy for virtual schools, we would ask that you have a parent on that committee. We would like you to commit to that today. We would like you to make it easier for all of us as parents to attend these meetings, hold them in full public view in different locations throughout the state. Field trips would be a wonderful thing. Not all of us live in Salem or anywhere close to Salem. The prospect of missing a full day of work or half a day of work is daunting at best. But many of us do it because our children are very important to us. And that pretty much sums up all I have to say about that. I appreciate you taking the time to hear us.
And I appreciate you taking time off from work to engage in this issue. Appreciate that very much.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Beatrix Newman. I am presently a real estate broker, and my husband is a technical writer. But previous to these professions, we were both educators in public school, brick and mortar. We have had four children, and my eldest one passed away, but my two next children were educated at different schools, including private and public schools, and graduated early and are doing very well. They graduated at 20 from 4 years ago and are doing very well. My youngest child is attending right now ORCA, Oregon Connections Academy, and we arrived at ORCA because we are very, very particular about education. Education is very important to us. And at the time that my eldest son had a brain hemorrhage and was in a coma for 9 months, it was too difficult to provide our youngest child, who is very talented, very intelligent, and very gifted, musician and otherwise, with what we thought he needed as a good education. At the time, we did not have ORCA. We eventually did find ORCA, and it satisfied basically all the needs that we had for that child and our high standards. It has a tremendous amount of responsiveness from its teachers. We can flip on that computer anytime and see what he has done and what he hasn't done. And if we need to tug him a bit, we can do that. That's really important to us. This has ensured that the homework doesn't get lost between the breakfast table and the teacher's desk. It's there. Also, because he is sort of multi-gifted and has a lot of interest, this has allowed him to participate in band, to participate in sports, to participate in various activities that he has enjoyed with other kids, and also at times to work. This, we believe, has given him an opportunity for a full life and an education that goes beyond just the books that we expect him to have and that he have, very good ones. The elasticity of this program accommodates the families that have to work different hours, the families that have situations that are sick at home, without them compromising their goals and ideals for their children. Also, as a family, we are hard workers. Everybody in my family has a job. We are hard workers. We pay our taxes. And we sort of feel like all of us as a society are laying a nice banquet out there at the table. And we and our children are not trying to grab food from anyone else. We just want to make sure they can step up to that plate and grab the piece of pie that fits them, whether it's chocolate or berries or whatever pie there is. There are all kinds of pies, and we feel that this banquet can accommodate various methods. This said, my concern is if the choice of the virtual school is tied to the local public, to the local brick and mortar school, that excellence that the school we are with has strived for and arrived at might not be there because there is no competition. If you have to go to the school of your district, whether it be virtual or public, I mean or mortar, there's no difference. And the problem I see with the district being able to decide whether we can attend a virtual school or not is that it seems to me like a bit of a conflict of interest. Because they're saying, fine, this child can go to what is not really our school. So the impetus would be very great, I believe, to make this virtual education part of their brick-and-mortar education. In other words, governed by the same entities. Finally, I would like to appeal to you because in these times where you have a lot of power, you can raise our taxes, you can raise energy price, and I know you use it wisely, but what we are asking you is to not close down our schools, not put lids that are so heavy that the growth and the evolution that the virtual school is going through, just as public school has gone through for the last 160 years or so since its inception, we would ask you not to have those lids put on, so that if you create a work group, keep that in mind, that if the lid is too heavy and it's too the parameters are such that we are hemmed in there, then it's growth. It's the creativity, the growth, and the dreams of our children and ourselves for our children that will be squashed. So that's my request. Please keep that in mind, and I know that in your hearts you really do want to see our children flourish, and you also, I'm sure, believe that parents will choose wisely as you would yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of our panel?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. And it's nice to know that we're not the only family that has that lost homework problem by the breakfast table. The door.
You are not alone.
All right, I have Deidre Wilson, J.D. McCann, Yvonne Guerrera, and Bill Mayer.
Senator Hass and members of the committee, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak with you today and testify. My name is Yvonne Guerra, and I'm the vice principal of the Estacada Web Academy, which is sponsored by the Estacada School District. I have a TSPC administrative license, and I have 12 years' experience as a public educator. The current enrollment of our school is 319 students, and we operate within the 50% rule. The Web Academy education model is one where we value personalized education, and this involves self-paced learning for our students. We feel that it meets the needs of all students. There's a lot of questions in regards to how much time a student spends in front of a computer. Our students spend approximately 20 hours in front of a computer working on their online courses. But our model also has a lot of other components which enrich their education. They work on projects. They are part of book clubs. They do readings and journals. They have college options, and they perform labs with partnerships that we have with different universities and different schools that we work with. They're also a part of service learning, where we have kids go out into the community and work together on community service as well as capstone projects. And a lot of these components are also worked through as our teachers go to the homes and work one-on-one with the students. We are an accredited institution, and our model is tied to Oregon State standards. And students participate in state testing, which the logistics of state testing for our students isn't always the easiest. Our graduation requirements have 24 credits, and we mirror the Oregon grad requirements for the class of 2012. Our staff is licensed and highly qualified. We work in professional learning teams to make sure that students are prepared and that all courses have appropriate rigor and innovation is encouraged and embraced. Differentiated curriculum and assessment support student learning, as this is seen in many models of our Students of the Month, as you'll see in the newsletter. We had planned on a 25-to-1 ratio, but due to current budget constraints, we had to go to a 28-to-1 ratio. I think that as a young administrator, a first-year administrator, one of the greatest and most rewarding experiences has been the work that we have done with our sponsoring school district, Estacada. They have really taken us under their wing. We are a part of committees. We have planned goals for AYP. We are part of their board meetings. And so this has been really beneficial as we have started our school. We share curriculum and ideas. I feel that we provide our district opportunity to enhance the traditional offerings of brick-and-mortar schools, and we offer alternative learning opportunities for non-traditional students. Our model is also one which can be an equalizer for smaller school districts, especially rural districts, who have a harder time providing the breadth and depth of larger schools, both in terms of curricular options and highly qualified staff. Furthermore, special education partnerships with resident districts assure that all students' needs are met. I'm here to ask you to please support legislation that, one, protects the parent and student choice integral to charter schools, two, ensures consistent quality and accountability for all Oregon virtual schools, and three, provides funding equity to charter school students. In closing, I guess I would summarize by saying that parents are the experts on their children and we're the experts on education. And I like to protect the parents' right to choose in terms of which public school their children should attend. Most students want a traditional K-12 model, but for those that don't and their parents, it's great that we have the opportunity for them to have the right to choose and that online schools provide a viable option within the public school system, which ensures that students are learning state standards in a personalized way and growing in their academic achievement. Many have wondered about the disconnect with parents and online education or an online school. I brought forth to you my our newsletter, and I encourage you to look at our website as we have previous newsletters there. I think it really is a snapshot of what our students are doing and what our school is about. And please do not diminish Oregon's commitment to opportunities for students who want or need alternative learning models. As far as the Dash 11s, I would say that we would support a work group to report back in January of 2010 to analyze key policies related to online learning in the K-12 public schools, not just charters. We would also support a timeout. I really like that term, Senator Haas, in terms of new virtual schools starting that don't have the charter done by July 1st, but would not support an enrollment freeze as our schools are new and growing. So thank you so much, Senators, for your support in public education and for listening to my input. This has been a most exciting opportunity, and I appreciate your time in listening about the work that we do with our students. It is really work that we bring us great pride. So thank you.
Senator, members of the committee, I am Bill Mayer and a colleague of Yvonne Guerra's, as we are part of a collection of charter schools across the state. I'm fortunate enough to work with charter schools in Central and Eastern Oregon. Sisters, Harney County, and Baker City school districts are our sponsors in those areas. And along with what Yvonne has just described as our abilities to serve students and families across the state, one of the things that I think is really our strength as a charter school is this personalized education in a way to provide quality education in a way that's flexible for the needs of various students. My work with more rural districts and families that live in more rural areas of Oregon has been amazing to me, the way that students who are on IEPs, students who are excellent students in TAG, students who have needs of schedules that need to have a bit of more flexibility to them, have all been met in a very effective way with our program. And we work with our supporting districts. We work with other educational opportunities for our students. So we're not totally an online school and a virtual school. And I think that's one of my concerns, is why I want to say that I, too, support the work group. There seems to be happening an agreement or a linking of the terms charter school and virtual school in our conversations. And they really shouldn't be connected or synonymous, as they seem to be happening when I listen to the testimonies and I talk to people who are close to this situation and passionate about this issue. And I really support the work group to really fetter those issues out and separate those, because they are intertwined, Senator Haas, as you said earlier, but yet they are distinct in their own way. When it comes to things that when we go to work in the morning, we ask ourselves, what's best for kids? And that's how we start our day, and that's how we start our work, and that's how our teachers start our work. And I really encourage all of us to do that, and I applaud the way that you have gone about this, because I really believe that that's where we're starting at in this, with these testimonies and in these hearings. We are fully supportive of accountability of charter schools. We are fully supportive of reporting requirements that have been established in the legislature. I would be a little concerned with the freeze of the waiver. We've experienced a lot of growth this year. Back in August of last year, our Web Academy started with about 400 students. We have five now. We have about 1,000 students in our Web Academies. Two words that you won't hear together as we talk among ourselves as administrators and teachers is waiting list. We really believe that if a student is in need of an educational opportunity, that we need to do all we can to provide that opportunity. And so we've set up our schools and set up our charter schools and our online curriculum to be able to provide that. And if a freeze were to go into effect, it would essentially freeze our growth as a new school and new charter schools in the state. Not to say that obviously we would continue to serve the students we have and we would continue to do the work that we're doing, but it's just something that we need to think about carefully as we look at charter schools and how charter schools are set up in the state of Oregon and virtual schools and the concerns that we have for virtual schools. And that's our only concern at this point. But in all other aspects, as far as accountability and reporting, highly qualified teachers, the 50-50 legislation that's in place, we abide by that, we support that, we can work with that, and look forward to continue to growth in that. We look forward also to be involved in the work group as much as we can be as individuals within our organization, or an organization that is able to speak to this work group and the concerns that we have and the perspectives that we have. That would be a very complimentary thing that we would be able to do for the state. And thank you very much for providing this time for me to give this testimony.
Thank you. Both of your academies are not-for-profit.
Correct. We're not-for-profit. We're in Oregon and a not-for-profit organization. Yes.
Can you tell us both what percentage of your students are ESL students and special needs students?
Do you want to do the ELL students? ESL students? Do you know the percentage?
I could provide those numbers specifically as far as the Web Academy students are concerned. I wouldn't want to give you an exact number as it is ever-changing.
Well, I was just curious how that works then. Do you have
I would love to talk to you about how that works with our ELL students. One of the things that we have is the WIMBA classroom, which is an online classroom. We also, basically kids can go ahead and sign on as a group, and a teacher leads you through a lesson as they would in a regular classroom. It's just that they're in different places. We also have students that come in. Our Hispanic population specifically comes into our office, and they work with several of our teachers. They do a lot of the communication activities that you would in a regular ELL classroom. And we also actually provide a lot of curriculum in their native language, because it is proven that the stronger your native language is, the faster you will pick up the secondary language or the target language. So we are constantly making sure that skills are being enhanced in that way.
How many different languages?
We have a lot of Russian speakers, and we also have quite a bit of Latino speakers, Hispanic speakers.
When it comes to special ed, we have a director of special ed who works with resident school districts and our sponsoring districts to set that up. I'm not sure exactly what the percentage is. I know it's very close to what a typical traditional brick-and-mortar school would be, but I don't have those figures with me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Romero, did I get your name right?
Guerra,
sorry. You've mentioned something about 20 hours spent at the computer by your students in your school's K-12. Is that an average per week for all grade levels?
Well, third grade through 12. Our K through second grade is pure paper pencil curriculum, so they would not be on the computer. The only computer access that a K through second grader could have is the access to Rosetta Stone, because we believe in making sure that kids have the ability to be in front of or practicing different languages at an early age. But then that's where the other components of our education plan comes in, because our teachers, when they go to the homes, they're able to give different personalized projects that are enhancing this curriculum, and they're working with kids on, you know, the writing process and different projects and arts and crafts. So a lot of the components that you would have in a traditional brick and mortar school, they're still getting.
Thank you. And can I ask a follow-up, please, Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. And then for your students that are in the elementary grades, is there a requirement that your school has that they have a parent with them or an adult? And can you talk a little bit about who's with the students at home?
Absolutely. During a teacher visit, is that what you're talking about? Or
no,
just in general?
In general.
In general, yeah. The students are very much involved with their parents. Their parents are constantly working with kids. We help parents with different ideas as far as how to also help their kiddos out with the curriculum and the different activities that they're taking place with. And then our teachers will sometimes visit once a week. Sometimes they'll have the kids come to our office, and they work in groups to get the social aspect, because we also believe that that's important. So we'll go ahead and we'll organize the curriculum so that they know what it is that they're supposed to work on, what activities they should do just in a regular structure day.
Thank you. And just one more question. You said that one of the things you were asking for was funding equity. Can you please tell us what that means to you and we've had a lot of discussions in the legislature about funding equity on so many levels, but just what is your definition of funding equity?
Well, to me, what I feel is that I think that a lot of the times people think that in order to run our programs that we don't need as much funds as a regular brick-and-mortar school. And it's just the way that the funds are distributed. For example, that our teachers aren't just behind a computer talking to a kiddo via IM or chatting or something like that. They're actually going to the homes. They're actually looking for labs. Our science teachers the other day, they went ahead and worked with George Fox University and got the lamb eyeballs and the frogs to do a dissection lab. And they have a lot of different materials that they're also needing to ensure that the students have the same opportunity as they would in a brick-and-mortar school. So I think when I think of funding equity, I think that, you know, we need the funds just as much as a brick-and-mortar school because we're just being innovated about how we are using the funds and we're trying to provide the same opportunities in the method that the student is able to learn.
Thank you.
Did you say lamb eyeballs? Okay. Thank you both for your excellent testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. I have Annette Trucker, Gary. I'm sorry. She's Gary Tempe, Patrick Donaldson,
and Mike did it last time.
And Mike Radway.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. My name is Mike Radway, and I work for the Knowledge Learning Corporation, which is based in Portland, Oregon. And I welcome an opportunity to clear up a couple of misconceptions that were raised at the last hearing, the first of which is whether or not this is only about out-of-state companies that care about virtual schools, and I'm here to tell you that no, Oregon companies care as well. The Knowledge Learning Corporation is the nation's largest and leading provider of educational services for children between the ages of 6 weeks and through high school. We have 1,000 employees here in Oregon and more than 40,000 employees across the nation. Most of our services are operated through traditional brick-and-mortar facilities, particularly early childhood learning centers, 1,600 of them in 38 states. We also operate before and after-school programs, tutoring programs, and summer programs for elementary school students in conjunction with local school districts. Our third line of business, which is really why I'm here today, is that we also operate KC Distance Learning, which is a provider of online education. KC Distance Learning offers online education in three different ways. We operate Keystone High School, which is a high school that was chartered in Pennsylvania many decades ago when it was actually just a correspondence school. Over time, as technology evolved, it became an online provider of education primarily to parents who were seeking to homeschool their children and needed instructional materials and so forth. And that is a 100% private pay model at Keystone High School. We also operate Adventa Learning. Adventa operates primarily in conjunction with local school districts, offering individual courses that school districts do not have staff to provide or do not have a sufficient number of students that they want to operate their own classrooms. So it offers the full range of high school courses, but it also offers more than 20 advanced placement courses and 6 foreign languages. And then the third way in which we operate online learning is we do operate full-scale high schools in 6 states in conjunction with local school districts. Ironically, Oregon is not one of those 6 states. The states that we currently operate in are Washington, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Kansas, Arizona, and Texas. In each of those states, we operate fully with the local school district. We use their teachers. Our teachers are fully certified under state law. We meet sort of all the requirements that both the state and the local school district impose upon all school districts that operate in the state. And it's a collegial partnership. And one of the other advantages and why we operate in those states and, frankly, don't operate in Oregon is the 50% requirement that currently exists in Oregon law, which in our mind is troublesome because it creates a situation where if you're not carefully managing your student body, you could end up having a large numbers of seniors graduate from the host school district and not enough freshmen replacing them that you could actually tell some of the out-of-district students, sorry, you can't come back next year because if you came back, we would be in violation of our 50% requirement. We don't want to have to be managing our student body in that sort of way. If students come to us and they want an education, we want to be able to serve all of them. We are fully supportive of high standards for teachers and for all the curriculum that we offer. Pretty much you can put pretty much anything you want in the legislation, and we're happy to deal with that. We also want you to know that we've been very successful in all the states that we operate. At IQ Academy Wisconsin, which is the school that we've operated the longest, we have a 96% graduation rate. All of our students outperform both the national average, the state average, and the host school district average on the ACT college admissions tests. And they do that in spite of the fact that 79% of the students who come to us deficient in either math or science. So we are taking students who are coming to us behind and bringing them up and beyond both their peers in the local school district in the state and at the nation. In terms of the legislation that is before you, and particularly the -11 amendments, which I've only just had a chance to quickly look at, I would make a couple of quick comments. One is that this has been described as a moratorium or a timeout, but unless I'm reading it incorrectly, there's no sunset on the moratorium or timeout, so it's a permanent timeout, which I think is not something that if you're going to go that way, you should put a moratorium or on the moratorium, as it were. Otherwise, no one will have an incentive to finish the task that you've assigned them. That is probably the single biggest thing that I would note. Also, the legislation, while it does set up a task force, which I think is a fine idea, contains a number of other changes to the underlying statute. If you're going to have a task force, you might as well have the task force look at all of these questions and not sort of predetermine the answers to some of the questions. And then lastly, I would also commend to your attention legislation which was adopted by the legislature in Washington State. Actually, just last Sunday, they sent it to the governor there for her signature. It sets up a process that's actually very similar to the process that's been recommended by the State Board of Education here in Oregon, where the State Board would be the chartering, supervisory, and regulatory body to oversee virtual schools. We think that is probably the most logical way to go about things moving forward, and I've provided a copy of the legislation to your staff, and we'll be happy to talk to you more about it.
Thank you, Mike. We have it here. Passed the House 98-0. And passed the Senate 37-9. So you
were able to,
you couldn't convince.
Yeah.
Yes. This is very helpful. Thank you.
And basically, they achieved that end result by setting high standards in the legislation, but not trying to micromanage and leaving the rest of it to the Superintendent of Public Instruction, the Board of Education, and a newly created Office of Online Learning in the Department of Education.
Thank you.
Senator Haas and members of the committee, my name is Gary Temple. I'm the superintendent of Siles School District, and we are the sponsor of Oregon Connections Academy. First, let me thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate the idea that we're going to take a step back and have a look at this. As one of the people who feels like we're tied to the tracks waiting for the train, I think this is a good idea. Anything that requires 13 amendments is a huge issue. And I know as I started 5 years ago as superintendent, then just starting to oversee ORCA, it took the better part of 2 years for me to start understanding the issues and what it was, the complexity of those issues. And I know the State Board is in the better part of 18 months as they work on those issues. And I know that these are very complex, and as we fix one thing, we find four other unintended consequences. But I need to let you know that the -11 amendments go much farther than just creating a work group and having a moratorium. And so I would certainly hope that we would be able to have a thoughtful discussion, that we would be able to have a work group. It makes sense to me that we would have a moratorium on starting new online charter schools, but it makes sense to me that we would honor the work of the State Board and what they've done so far. And this would actually take away the waiver, it would put a moratorium also on the waiver ability of the State Board, which, depending on when this committee finished their work, would put an end to about the education of 3,500 students and would displace them. The second thing that this the Dash 11 still do is they talk about the financial transparency. And although it intrigues me, the thought of expanding this part of the bill so that every vendor that works with public education had to tell us their profit margin and the salaries of all the people that work with them, I don't know that that's practical, and I don't know that that's what the committee is actually trying to get at. If what we're trying to do is make sure that those students are getting a quality education for the money that we're spending, then a fee schedule makes sense. And I'll tell you that fee schedules already exist, and they have been looked at by the State Board for approval. And just one of the things that people think, or one of the misconceptions, is that when I write a check to the charter school, they turn around and write a check in that amount to their vendor, and that is not at all the case. They buy staff and supplies, rent, facilities, pay for insurance, PERS, computers, software, and then by their choosing, they pick things off of a fee schedule that makes sense to them. And so certainly fee schedules and making sure, and that's what I do as part of oversight, is I look at that fee schedule to make sure that it makes sense. And could I buy that service for that same price or less? And if they're paying less than what I would pay if I were to go out and get that service, that makes sense to me. The one thing that everyone does agree on is that we want high-quality education for online education in the state of Oregon. And the Dash 11s still contain those quality standards, but I would suggest that they may or may not encompass all the quality standards that we want for an online education, and that they may not be what we need in the future. And so we need some way for those to evolve. And if we put those in statute, then we're going to have to come back possibly every 2 years to ask you to change those and make those work or add more. And so it may make more sense to put those in rules so they can evolve over time. And then finally, again, I look forward to the opportunity for us to have a thoughtful discussion. I hope that those of us that are in the field will have the opportunity to participate in the work group to tell you how online education works and doesn't work, and what it is and what it's not. And as part of that process, I would invite you to come to our school and see how it works. So with that, I'm done, and I will pass the baton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. For the record, my name is Patrick Donaldson. I am a business owner and resident of the city of Portland, but I come here today testifying as the chairman of a nonprofit Oregon corporation called Oregon Virtual Education Partners. We were retained about a year and a half ago by the Reynolds School District, which, as you may be aware, is an entrepreneurial school district in eastern Multnomah County. I and other residents of that district came together at the charge of the school board to identify, interview, and select and supervise a virtual education vendor, which we did. We are under contract with the Reynolds School District as the nonprofit to provide those services. We started this last February with a standard, rigorous educational offering for them, for those students. I've attached some information about Kaplan Incorporated, which is a, as you know, started in 1938, 71-year-old company, and if you've taken the SATs or GREs or LSATs, you know the Kaplan people. They provide educational services to both college as well as K through 12, and they provide virtual education services through what is called the Kaplan Virtual Education, KVE. Now, our nonprofit board of directors selected Kaplan because we felt that Kaplan most closely met the unique needs and experiences and desires of the Reynolds School District, its community, its citizens, and its students. Now, the burdensome, in my judgment, burdensome requirements of the what is called the 50% rule, ORS 338-125, and the absence of a waiver has led us to turn away 154 students this last year. So we have a lot of demand, but no place to put them, similar to some of the comments that were made earlier. So that waiting list continues, and we still add people as they come forward. Now, we hope that through this process, you're going to empower parents and students and the district to have the ability to choose this complementary form of education to some students in the district and some families. Now, the term freeze, hiatus, moratorium, and timeout have been used. Those words all have a temporary component to them, as opposed to permanent. I point that out specifically because this issue about the 50% waiver is particularly onerous, and if in fact we cap the population of students at a certain arbitrary amount, which has been mentioned in, I think, in number 11 or number 13, that creates some real challenges for our particular school and others as well. Now, we've looked at 11 and 13 in the last few minutes, and I guess that I would amplify what everyone else has said, which is we support the concept of accountability and transparency and quality control. And a resident of the Portland Public School District, I look forward to receiving that same thing from my educational vendor. But the work group in particular, which I find fascinating, is was mentioned earlier, is that what's missing there are students, parents, and the people who are stakeholders in this whole process as well, and would amplify the statement that was made by someone else earlier to add that to community members. However, if 767 moves forward in its original form, or -11, or -13, or -whatever, the year-and-a-half effort in our community will come to naught. The students, the parents of those students, the teachers, the school board members, the community members, and the business community, all of whom are part of this, will suddenly be disenfranchised. And so we would ask that you very carefully consider the implications of this and not solve a problem with a solution that we, when we haven't even defined what the problem happens to be, if in fact that there is one. With that, I conclude my remarks, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donaldson. I just want to remind you on the task force, the first of all, the language says the members of the work group may include the following. And it does say representatives, teachers, administrators, public charter schools that provide online instruction. But the words may indicate to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Senator, that we can put parents in, we can put vendors, and I fully, you know, nobody wants to be exclusive in this process.
So I take that to mean that your intent, as you read this, is that might but doesn't necessarily mean, and it's not exclusive.
That's right.
That so the language could, in fact, be changed in -14 to absolutely guarantee a place at the table.
Mr. Dunn, you are giving me way too much credit here. If you think we're gonna. And Mr. Temple, I did want to push back a little bit on your assertion that maybe we shouldn't have some of this record keeping for these vendors. In Oregon now, in our schools, we know exactly how much every superintendent of every school district makes in salary. Mm-hmm. We know every teacher's salary, and everybody in this room can find that out because public money is vested there. And if you're a private company, I don't care how much you make or what you earn or what your profits are until the moment that public money from Oregon starts going into your private company.
Well,
and that's the reason for that, and I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah, and I don't think it's unreasonable either, except for I'd like to see that from McGraw-Hill and Prentice Hall. These companies are vendors just like all of those other companies. And so certainly, Senator Hyas, that all of their employees that work in ORCA are public employees, and they do list their salaries.
Okay.
They are audited absolutely in a public online public school. That is true. It's the next level, the third tier of where you go to get the services. And as I read the bill broadly, I'm not sure that the company that comes and puts in the fire alarm that's providing the educational services might not be subject to that as well. So I don't know if that got you where you wanted to be, because I really think what we need to be worried about is if we're spending $5,000 on a student's education, we need to make sure that they're getting $5,000 of education. I think that's critical. And I think that's where we get into the quality standards.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Senator Bonavici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to reiterate what the chair said about the wording of the members of the work group, that I do see that as a broad reading, that it may include those. That means that it could include others as well. So I want to support that interpretation. And then I also wanted to respond to Mr. Radway's comment about not having a sunset on the timeout. On page 17 of the Dash 11 amendments, it says that the work group shall submit a report and may include recommendations for legislation to the next session of the 75th Legislative Assembly. And certainly with the amount of attention that's been given to this issue and this bill and the list of issues that will be considered by the work group, I can't imagine that won't happen and that those issues won't be considered. And so I don't see it's a problem at all that there's no sunset on the timeout, because the whole intent of the Dash 11 amendments and the work group is to take all of those things into consideration and to come back with a report. So I just don't see that as an issue. Certainly with the amount of attention that's been given to this issue, I'm sure that many of you will continue to be involved as this process goes forward, that there will be something in the next session of the legislature.
I would just say that if you want to give all the parties to the discussion an incentive to negotiate a reasonable solution, the best way to achieve that goal is to make sure that nobody is benefited by the status quo. And therefore, if you just inserted a date, maybe 6 months, a year, whatever, after the report came back when the timeout would end, that would have that effect.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I think there's a lot of incentive now to work on this issue. So thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you. Okay, that is the testimony that we had left over. And for today, I would like to call up, if he is still here, Jerry Wilkes from ORCA.
Thank you, Senator Haas, and members of the committee. My name is Jerry Wilkes. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Connections Academy, and I'd like to just take a few minutes today just to kind of introduce myself and give you a little background information about myself. I moved to Oregon 2 years ago from the state of Nebraska, where I enjoyed 37 years as a professional educator. I served for 10 years as a classroom teacher and football coach in an inner-city school of 2,600 students in Omaha, and 27 years as a principal and superintendent in 7 districts ranging from size of 400 students in grades K through 12 to 35,000 students in the city of Lincoln. I was given the opportunity by the Lincoln Public School Board of Education to open the first comprehensive high school in Lincoln, the first new school in over 35 years. It was a large building project of over $50 million that eventually housed 2,300 students and 200 school staff. I was the first employee at the new school, appointed by the Lincoln Board of Education in 2002. After 37 years as an educator, I qualified for early retirement from Nebraska in the employee's retirement system and planned to move to Oregon to be closer to family and a new grandson. I was not ready to kick back in a rocking chair or fly fishing full-time, so I started to investigate some Oregon school employment opportunities. 2 years ago, I discovered a posting for a head administrator in a virtual school based in Scio, Oregon, called the Oregon Connections Academy. I started to do an in-depth investigation of the school, focusing on academic achievement, delivery of instruction, and how technology worked, and the quality of the teaching staff. After my long, successful career in Nebraska, I wanted my fourth quarter career move to be the best, because that's the one I would remember the most. After my investigation was complete and I began the interview process, the more I learned about the Oregon Connections Academy and what it offered students and family, I was very impressed. I am the type of school administrator who likes to see results, the data, in student achievement for all students, no matter what their background or income level is. What I found was a school made up of highly qualified teachers, a top-of-the-line K-12 curriculum, personalization, state-approved curriculum alignments, a very high parent satisfaction rating of over 95%, a school that made AYP in both participation and performance, and a very involved, caring, and passionate group of parents. Coming to a virtual school setting after 37 years in a traditional brick-and-mortar school presented a very steep learning curve for me, as you can imagine. But with the help of the Connections Academy training staff, I made the transition in a relatively short amount of time. I was used to working with the best and the brightest during my long tenure in Nebraska, and I did not want to compromise my record and experience by just going to any school. The Oregon Connections Academy is not just another school. In fact, it has outperformed any other school that I've been associated with during my long career. This brings me to Senate Bill 767. This bill, in any form yet proposed, would be a slow death knell to a school like ours serving over 2,700 students in grades K through 12. In closing, I would like to offer my services as a resource to this committee. If you decide to move forward, and I understand a work group is being proposed, in any manner to do policy work either during this session or the interim, I believe that because of my background as a 39-year career educator with experience in both large and small school districts, building schools on tight budgets, and now a large virtual charter school administrator, gives me a perspective that I believe can be helpful in your work. Thank you for giving me this time today to introduce myself and make a connection with the committee.
I appreciate you traveling over here. You're from Kansas?
Nebraska.
Nebraska now. And do we have any questions?
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilkes, you talked about the success of your students and your student achievement and how you have a very involved group of caring parents, which I think is sort of a given the nature of how your school is structured,
right,
and how your school is outperforming other schools. And I asked a question in one of the prior hearings, and I'm really interested in whether you have any data or if there have been any studies that compare students in a virtual charter school where they do have basically this very involved parent who's at least in the elementary schools, from the way I can tell, acting as basically a personal tutor for the student. Do you have anything that compares those students with the students in a brick-and-mortar school who have parents at home every day when they come home who can help them with their schoolwork and who have that sort of supportive family? Because, as you know, coming from a public school system, not all the public school students are in that situation where they have caring, supportive, helpful parents at home. So I'm really interested in, I don't doubt that the students are successful, but I'm interested in knowing how much of that success is attributable to the fact that they have that one-on-one teacher who is typically their parent versus the curriculum or the model.
Right.
And I don't know if there have been any studies like that where there's been some sort of control group or where you've done a comparison so that you're really comparing the same type of student getting the same sort of support. Is the success because of the model or is the success because of the parent involvement?
I think that's very interesting. And we just, this is our first year of being K-12. This is our first graduating class coming through now. So that would be something that I would want to do. And I think that's on the front burner now for the future, and do some comparisons as a K-12 when we've got a full group of kids that are now in our school. Well, I currently don't have anything to have on hand right now, but that's something we definitely want to look at.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Wilkes, a lot of this discussion centers around money, of course, and the issues with bricks and mortar schools is that you have to pay for those bricks and mortars and the heat and the janitors and everything else. And I'm wondering, would you support or oppose, if we get down this far, changing the financial structure so it limits or reduces the ADMW for schools like yours because of that differential?
Well, you know, I think right now at the point we're getting, we're educating our kids for over $5,000. And I think, as you know, in the brick and mortar school, most of that cost, 85% of that cost goes for teacher salaries and benefits and so forth that we pay. I think we run a real streamlined, tight budget, and we're in the same situation a lot of other school districts are in the state right now to reducing costs because of less money coming in. And I would not be in favor of any reduction of funds for our school right now because I think we run the tight budget and we make the best use of out of every dollar that we have.
To follow up on the previous discussion, then, you know, there's some transparency language that's being considered in so much as we know how much schools spend on, you know,
right.
Things from cleaners to teacher salaries and all of
right.
that. It seems fair, then, if schools like yours receive public dollars, that those same kinds of records should be made public.
You bet. I think they should, right? And I'd be happy to do that.
Including salaries?
Yes.
Including profit margins?
We're for nonprofit.
Or the margins?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Another question.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do your teachers come to a particular building to work, or do they work independently, or how is that structured?
Our teachers work remotely. They work from home. We have in SIO, we have some myself, I office in SIO, and we have administrative assistants in SIO. But we have we meet once a week with staff in various hubs throughout the state, and we also have 6 all-staff meetings, which is tomorrow our 5th all-staff meeting of the year, where we come into Salem and meet with our entire staff for in-service staff development and those kinds of things. And in our regular meetings that we have monthly, we divide it into 4 different types of meetings. We have what we call our regular hub meeting, which is like a faculty meeting, a regular faculty meeting. Then we have a training session on a Thursday. Then we have another time where we have contacts, our student contact days. We have had over 120 field trips, seminars, with meeting with kids and families throughout the year at that time when teachers can go out and do that. So, We do get together, but there's no school building where everybody is located.
And typically in a brick and mortar school, the administration is there to sort of check in on the teachers and
right.
supervise them and have staff meetings. So how
right.
is that support, administrative support, given to teachers who are working at home?
It's unbelievable, the technology that I have too. I can monitor staff and communicate with staff far much better than I ever could in a high school of 2,600 students going into the classroom. A lot of times the classroom doors would close. You don't know what's going on in there. We have the technology where I know, for example, when every staff member comes on and when they sign on. We have instant messages. We have telephones. We're on the screen. We also have information that I can gather, and I can tie into live lessons. I can observe live lessons that are going on between teachers and their class. I also can see how I can look at a teacher's, we call it accountability report, and I know how many assessments they were given, what lessons the kids were on, if they're slowing or they're increasing, and all that data is in front of me every day. So when I come in the morning, I can look at the entire staff, where they are, if they're on board, and where the kids are, which is the most important thing, to find out where the kids are in the lessons, if they're behind, and do I need to make contacts with parents, do I need to make contacts with kids. But all that information is in a data view. We have a lot of data views that provide that for me. And I didn't have that data view when I was in a brick and mortar office. I had to go out and look and see and break into and go into classrooms and so forth. And I couldn't get to everybody because there was 150 classrooms. But here I can look at that. And I have assistant principals that are assigned to those different hubs also to keep the ratio down. So I'm not supervising 80 people. I have assistant principals that are located in those hubs that have that coordinate those meetings, and I go to alternate meetings each month. But it's far more, it's easier for me to communicate, and even though the teachers are working at home, I know that sounds a little bit strange, but because of the software, because of the data, access data that I have, and the ongoing, one of the things our parents can see, and I know we got parents here today, they know by that minute where their kids are with their lesson completions, their assessments. I have the same information. So if a teacher isn't making, we require them to make a certain number of calls to parents per week. If they're not making those calls, it's not documented. I can say, you know, Ms. Smith, what's going on? How come you haven't making those contacts with those kids? So I have that information where I can.
Thank you. One more follow-up. Sorry, just trying to understand the structure.
Yeah.
And so when you say you observe them, are there cameras? I know that sometimes there's web cameras. I know you don't want to see if the teacher's sitting there in her pajamas or something, but is there?
No.
Okay, so it's not cameras, it's just that they're logged on and you can tell when they're online.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. I would love to have any of you come down to SIO, and I know Mr. Temple did invite you down there to come down. We'd even bring our computers up here and show you exactly what I'm talking about. And, you know, live lessons, how teachers deliver the instruction, and how we as supervisors monitor that. I'd love to do that for you, invite you down there to see it in action. It's hard to describe. It was hard for me to transition into this from the brick and mortar into this environment, but it's very effective and it works.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Further questions, Senator Morris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, the teachers are hired by the district. Is that correct?
They're hired by me, right.
They're hired by you, so they're employees of the public.
Right.
The technology that you have and the resource, the curriculum, is provided by a third party.
Correct.
And what percentage of your cost of education is attributed to the sourcing of those materials?
You know, I don't have that right in front of me right now, Senator, but I certainly can get that information to you, the percentage of that, and send it to you. I certainly will do that. I don't want to give you something inaccurate. But.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for coming down.
Thanks, Senator.
I appreciate your help today and moving forward. And I apologize for mistakenly saying you were from Kansas, because I know Nebraska football fans do not
right. And as a,
appreciate
as a former
that
player,
all.
That upset me, but I didn't
yes,
show it.
I apologize.
Thank you very much.
And finally, on this issue, we have Otto Schell.
Wasn't sure I was going to be up. I have some written comments, and I'll give them to you after.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Otto Schell. Pardon me. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon PTA. I have written comments to you, which I will dig out of my bag here in a moment and provide them to you. More importantly, last week we had a lobby day in our convention here in Salem, and it afforded us a chance to meet and talk about this issue and about the Senate Bill 767. After our board had a fairly lengthy conversation about this, it became apparent that we needed to weigh in and support this bill, because the more we learned, I've been able to come and observe and listen to all the testimony, the more we learned, the more we realized that there were pretty substantial issues around online education, virtual charter schools, that you all need to attend to. So we believe that Senate Bill 767 is a good start and moves things forward to get those things discussed, to provide the accountability and the transparency that seems to be lacking in certain programs and is greatly distressing to our board and many of our members. In particular, we had a discussion with one of our board members whose child is enrolled at Connections Academy, and her experience was troubling at best because of inability to connect with teachers, not getting responses to phone calls, the mom's self-reporting that her kid is not testing at benchmarks at grade level, and that many of her friends' children are in the similar circumstances. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, and I think Senate Bill 767 is a good start.
Thank you. questions? Otto? Thank you very much.
You bet.
I want to thank everyone who has been to these hearings. We are not done yet, but I very much, sincerely, thank you for engaging us on this important issue. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 767. And I'm going to, where are we here? Open public hearing on Senate Bill 574.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 574 relates to the reconfiguration of education services. Actually, that's a bit of a reach because the amendments deal with reconfiguration of the educational service districts. We have Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments before us, and your offices should receive copies of them yesterday. The differences between the two relate to the configuration of ESDs. The Dash 1s have language and a map that we'll bring out to you if you don't have handy that has 13 ESDs, and the Dash 2s have 12 ESDs. Each of the amendments establishes a governance structure for these reconfigured ESDs. It's patterned on the pilot ESD programs. It provides for transfer of property and employment contracts from existing ESDs to the newly reconfigured ESDs. And it talks about the funding between the former ESDs and newly reconfigured ESDs. And there we are, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and I'm hoping that perhaps we can bring Senator Cruz back in because one of these amendments are his.
Yes. And I'll get the sheets. How about that?
I think I've talked to everybody in the committee, but and is Ozzie Rose here?
He's right
okay.
Out.
All right. And maybe he can walk us through some of this, but essentially what you have, committee, is the consolidation of ESDs from 21 to 13, and a consolidation that was supported and endorsed by the ESD Association, and these two amendments are identical with the exception of one minor change within the map that I'm sure we'll hear about that Senator Cruz came up with. In our decision today is which one of these amendments to adopt and to send to the Ways and Means Committee. So, Ozzie is en route. Stand down until we can get our other center here. Ozzie, welcome. Okay, go ahead. Do you want to add anything to what we've had here other than your own intro? And then we have five or six people here who want to testify.
I'm sorry, I was outside the room, so I don't know what you mean. My intro, I assume that the amendments have been, all I'll comment then is where the association is on the amendments. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I'm representing the Oregon Association of ESDs. And our group, as many of you know, through a pretty difficult process of getting agreement amongst folks that have different views, built the map that is in the Dash 1 amendments. And we still support that map. Our group does not support the governance structure concept. It's mandated in these amendments. You passed Senate Bill 41A that makes it voluntary, and our group still believes that's the way it ought to be.
Okay. The association vote 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago was what? What were those results of this map?
The exact numbers, we voted twice, once all of the ESDs and then once the executive committee. Mr. President, can you help me with that? It was a majority, at least.
Okay.
Jim Mabbitt, co-chair of the ESD organization. with our vote, our official vote, with our executive committee, that vote was 11-2 in favor of the map that we produced. Someone asked for a roll call of ESDs, which isn't an official vote, but it was 12 in favor, 8 opposed.
Okay, and what map, just Mr. Chair, just remind me what the map you voted on.
Dash one.
And I want to just clarify that that vote on the ESDs being singled out was whether or not we would move forward to create a map. Once we had that vote, though, and we were going to move forward, and we created the map, then the final vote on the map itself was 11-1.
Okay, gotcha. All right, if you guys could just stand by.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Well, these folks are here. I do have a question. Without exhaustive detail, what would you expect to accomplish with the reorganization?
The purpose, I think, or excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, the overall purpose of reducing the number of ESDs, realigning them, is to create larger bodies that have more capacity to serve school districts. And those that think we ought to believe that if you have a larger base of students, you will be able to better serve all of the students in your area.
Will there be any, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Will there be expected economies of scale, or there's two issues. One is cost and one is service. Can you reduce cost and increase service?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I was referring to economies of scale, I think, in the way you're using the terms. I don't argue that this would save money. I would argue that it realigns how money is spent and you get better services to kids. That's the intent of trying to rearrange. And this is not the first time, as you know, that we've reduced the number of ESDs, and that's always been the driving force, to try to create a base that has enough capacity to provide better services to every kid in every school district, large or small.
Okay. While you two are here, Senator Cruz is back. And Senator Cruz, we have a copy of both of the maps. Number one is the one the ESDs gave us. Number two is the one with a very slight change that you presided over. Can you explain the nuance?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It was just, there's been so many bites at this apple. And I think the thing I like most about my map is the colors are arranged better.
Your map is number two?
Yeah.
Yours is pretty.
Yeah. He hand-colored this. Yeah. He had real fun.
And I stayed in the lines really well, too.
Really good.
So the concept behind this map was to ensure that every ESD had at minimum one large school district within it and a institution of higher education within it. And that was, and of course some of them have several or both, obviously. But that was the concept behind Map 2. To say that either of these is the silver bullet that solves the problem, I think, as being inaccurate. Myself, Mr. Chair, I still would like us to get to the point where whatever revision we're going to do, we have somewhat of a detailed business plan going in before we actually do it. And if I could, in 2005 when we did the work groups that created the pilots. We had work groups that met on a very regular basis, very late at night, for months, to come up with just doing the pilot. Okay? And we got buy-in to do that. And in my opinion, to do something this dramatic without having the benefit of that sort of rigor on the front end, my comfort level's not really high. And I've told you, Mr. Chair, I'm not opposed to the objective here. My discomfort at this point in time is that we have not put in the appropriate legwork to make the decision. And, you know, whether my map is any better than the other map, I can't say that for sure because we haven't had all the input. But it does point out that there's a whole lot of criteria that need to be dealt with in redrawing a map, do something of this scale and this magnitude. So if I had my way, which of course I don't, I would propose doing something similar to what we're going to do with virtuals, and that's create a work group and bring something back to February.
I have a question.
Senator Bonamici.
We have a dash one and a dash two, and what I'm curious about is which of those lines up with which map?
Dash one lines up with the map dash one, number one, and the dash two lines up with number two.
Well, except the dash two only. The dash two has only 12 regions.
That's
right. So that's the difference. There's 12 and versus 13. That's right.
It's 12.
Yes, that's true.
Right. Yeah. I did.
Okay.
Well, we were having a discussion about going from 21. To 13, and so now I'm
21 to 13.
I haven't been in the inner workings of this negotiation like Senator Cruz. I'm just trying to catch up.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll get you to stand down here, and I'm going to go through this list four at a time. Matt Gardner, Rick Molitor, Barbara Garland, and Becky Bell. We'd appreciate it if you have written testimony to hand it in and not read it out loud to us and just highlight, summarize wherever possible.
Senator Haas, my name is Matt Gardner. I'm the chair of the Jefferson County ESD. And I'm here on behalf of Senate Bill 574, speaking in opposition. I have before me a letter which I will summarize for you from a parent who approached me recently knowing that this legislation was pending and had some very serious concerns about the total scope. And I'll just read a couple of pieces from this. We would like to express our concern, and this letter is from both her and her husband. We'd like to express our concern regarding Senate Bill 574, which seeks to merge Jefferson County Education Service District with High Desert Education Service District. We are parents of two teenage girls, one who has special needs, and receive services through Jefferson County ESD. Our ESD has done an exemplary job providing great programs for our children and others like her through the 14-plus years she has received services. I am concerned that removing control of our ESD program would certainly be detrimental to Jefferson County students. We grew up in Madras. We live in Culver. This young lady attends the Culver School District, which is one of our supported school districts. My husband and I are both nurse leaders at Mountain View Hospital in Madras, where we have worked for 18-plus years. We have seen firsthand, as in residents of a small town and in our hospital experience, that when small organizations try to serve the needs of their population are merged with large organizations, much is lost. Most concerning is that the small facility has very little or no representation and doesn't carry enough weight to impact decisions. Needs of small communities are not the same as large ones, so the different needs of a small community often are overlooked. And it takes a lot longer to make changes, even on important issues, as needed. If we aren't going to save money or improve services, what is the purpose of combining the districts? I challenge you to look to Jefferson County ESD and see what they've been able to provide the students that they serve. Our ESD has been doing a great job making our community better and should be rewarded and held up as an example, not done away with. Please consider the negative impacts this merger will have on our children, Will and Susie Bean. Senator, I've been on the ESD board for 6 years. I'm the current chairman for this year. And prior to that time, I was a high school teacher at Madras High School. And before that, in one of my earlier lives, I was a graduate instructor at the Defense Department University System. I've seen large organizations, and I've seen sometimes when large organizations take over small organizations, the difficulty that transition has. I would also comment that I'm on the board of directors of the Mountain View Hospital, and I know Will and Susie Bean personally. And as a small, rural, critical access hospital, we have working relationships with St. Charles Hospital in Bend. And sometimes those working relationships with a much larger organization is tough. And sometimes the smaller hospitals aren't always recognized. So in the scope of those points, I would just ask that you please consider the role of some of the smaller organizations that would be absorbed in. And we're certainly very supportive, Senator Cruz, of your comments on potentially a working group if that seems possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And good afternoon, Senator Haas and committee members. My name is Rick Molitor. I'm currently the superintendent of Jefferson County ESD, along with the superintendent of Jefferson County School District. I'm here also to oppose Senate Bill 574 and any bill that would look at the reduction or the merger of ESDs. I have a unique background in that I serve as both a superintendent of an ESD and a school district. I'm also a recent transplant from Washington, and I have extensive working knowledge of the Washington ESD system that has been referred to many times with the nine ESDs that are up in Washington State. With that background in mind, I'm somewhat bewildered by the acts and this bill moving forward. I love the idea. I had this nice letter written out, and then since I've been hearing a lot of these, I'm just kind of throwing that to the side and speaking from my heart. I have a lot of experience over the past year of seeing how effective Jefferson County ESD has been. And I think some of the statements going through, Senator Morris asking, what's the benefit from this? We know it's not a financial savings. In fact, there's been studies that have shown that consolidation does cost districts during the consolidation process. In these economic times, by taking any money away, the limited resources that we have, it's going to be difficult to justify those costs of merging. I think it's also very strong when I hold up the map of the state. The green areas that I have highlighted are the eight ESDs that voted against the merger. They were the ones that did not see a benefit of moving forward. It really does speak to the rural districts and the rural communities that we do serve. I've also done a little bit of research and try to figure out if there's more reasoning behind it. If it's not a fiscal savings, then I'm hearing that it could be a savings towards or increased services. And I beg to differ for that. I think larger ESDs are able to provide more services. However, I believe the small ESDs, particularly Jefferson County, were very proud of the services that we do provide and the quality of those services. It's the, do you want to have more services? As a superintendent of the school district, I can care less about the menu of services offered to me. I want the services that I currently have provided at the level that they're given to me. And I believe with the merger, my current services provided by the ESD will not be provided in the same level. I might be able to have more choices, but I don't think they're going to best serve the needs of our students. I also did, like I say, a little bit of research, and I found the Educational Enterprise Roadmap. It's the analysis of the Annenberg and Gibson reports. This was revised in January 11 of 2007, and in the opening statement on the third paragraph, it reads, one recommendation of the Gibson report is to create a more centralized ESD system with direct state control of budgets, goal setting, and some personnel decisions. This recommendation should be set aside. Oregon has long taken pride and value in local decision-making processes. The resistance from local districts and ESDs, as well as their surrounding communities, would be such that little progress would be made towards improving efficiencies with each sector. We have four school districts in Jefferson County that we serve. We have a very unique relationship with Warm Springs Reservation and serving the students of Warm Springs. That relationship has been built over 50 years. And by moving the educational service districts even further away from Warm Springs and the serving districts of Jefferson County, I can't see a benefit to those services whatsoever. I would also just highlight a little bit more about Jefferson County School District, Jefferson County ESD. The services that we do provide, we have a very low administrative overhead. We have less than 5% of our funding is spent towards administrative overhead. That calculates to over 95% of our money going directly to student services. I see that daily as the superintendent of a school district receiving those services. Because of that, that's why I ask, why are we looking at trying to fix something if it's not broken? Jefferson County School District receives great services from the ESD. I would like to move forward with what you talked about with the previous bill. I think a timeout would be great right now. I would like to see it move forward and really focus on what Senator Moore said. Why are we doing this? And how can we prove that this will be better for the students of Oregon? I thank you for your time and am willing to provide more information or sit on any type of committee that you would have to work forward on some of these issues.
Thank you.
My name is Becky Bell. I'm a behavior specialist for the Jefferson County ESD in Madras and a parent of a child that receives services from regional ESD.
Ms. Bell, I don't mean to interrupt. Are you all from Jefferson? Go ahead and complete your testimony, but we do have other ESDs and other people that and I think we kind of got the point here from Jefferson. So if you could summarize your points, I appreciate it very much.
Okay, I'll do my best. I do oppose Senate Bill 574, and thank you for hearing me, committee. My son is 13, and he goes to school in Culver, and he has autism, and he receives regional ESD support approximately 15 minutes once every 3 months, and he receives one-on-one support from a Jefferson County ESD specialist on a daily basis. Because of the Jefferson County ESD specialist, he is in school and he's accessing regular education. The regional specialist provides a tool or two here and there. Also, as a behavior specialist, I work one-on-one with behaviorally challenged children. I have a student that receives one-on-one support from me and is able to now access, he's 7 years old, and he's able to access Gen Ed because of the specialized service that I provide him as a behavior specialist. And these kids are learning to read and write. They're accessing education that regional service couldn't provide them. And to summarize, it's my position that Senate Bill 574 does not give individualized supports for the students in those rural communities, including my son and including at least 24 students that are currently served under the behavior programs in the district. And thank you, Senator Haas and committee members. I tried to summarize this as
very good.
Thank you.
Okay, so do you want me to continue or do you?
Please.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Haas and the committee members. My name is Barbara Garland, and I'm the Special Programs Director for the Jefferson County School District, and I oppose Senate Bill 574. ESDs were created with a mission to provide equitable, high quality, cost effective, and locally responsive educational services for children. The small ESDs live that mission statement by providing more services for children with less funding. In perhaps the worst economic crisis our state has faced, Senate Bill 574 takes funding dedicated to Oregon school children living in rural communities and repositions those funds into larger ESDs and larger communities. However, the same mandates exist to provide services to more distant locations created by the new merger and the larger service areas. Creating larger, more powerful ESDs to deliver services to more distant locations would logically cost more, and it would require more administrative overhead, not less. In addition, the direct service time provided by specialists to children will be greatly diminished. by the time replaced by driving long distances to each location. Our current providers live in our community, which maximizes those services directly provided to the students of Jefferson County. In the most challenging economic times, will those services actually reach the rural communities? Or will the funds subsidize the programs provided by the larger communities? Yes, a governance model would provide a vote for the small communities, but the ESDs located within the larger communities and with more votes, who do you think will have the stronger voice? I don't think it would be the smaller communities. Senate Bill 574 would create a disparity of services between children living in larger communities and children living in smaller communities. It also creates a system that could no longer live up to the mission by providing equitable, high-quality, cost-effective, and locally responsive services for our children. Thank you for listening to my comments and my concerns. I have many more, but I summarized. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Appreciate your testimony.
I have a quick question before they leave. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we're short on time, but and I'm sorry, I forgot your name, who used to be in Washington. We've heard some discussion about how Washington has 9 ESDs. And you seem to question that. I know we're short on time, but can you sort of outline what your problems are with that structure?
And once again, Rick Molitor, the superintendent of both of those, like Barbara Garland had just said, the larger entities do have more options available to districts. I was in a very remote and rural district. We were 45 miles away from our local ESD. As I said, it was more of a consultative model. They were able to provide us information and provide us guidance, but they did not and were not able to provide us direct support through personnel. And as I came to Oregon and saw the unique relationship that Jefferson County has with the ESD and the services it provides, I'm very fearful at this point of what's going to happen in 2 years with the school districts, particularly my school district that I oversee as superintendent, with those services. It will look very different than what it currently looks like. And I think that look will be a detriment to students.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Maltra, I also want to make sure that you know that while you were up in Washington, we have been on this issue. I started working on this issue in 2003, so it's not like there haven't been work groups in the past, and our crews, I think, has been on 14 of them already. So this issue is not new to us. Thank you all for your testimony. David Hicks, Kristen McGowan, Jonathan Hill.
You have to come to the legislature to see people you haven't seen around.
If you guys need a moment.
Go ahead. It's just funny. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Jonathan Hill. I'm the superintendent of the Douglas Education Service District. And I'll hit these points very quickly. The ESD board, Douglas ESD, is opposed to mandated mergers. However, we have experienced declining enrollment every year for the last 5. We lose about $30,000 a year in capacity. And so the discussion about capacity and how that can be done differently begins to resonate with us. We're looking at 18.7% unemployment in Douglas County, which means we'll be hemorrhaging ADMW out of school districts in Douglas County in the very near future. And that's absolutely going to have an effect on the ESD and how it can function and support its districts. The Douglas ESD board is strongly opposed to the changes in governance model. As you're aware, Senator Cruz represents us. You can rest assured there have been spirited discussions in Douglas County with Senator Cruz on that particular point. The third point I want to make is something I'd like to see. My mission here, by the way, is to make this a better bill. And so to that point, In my comments, you'll see bolded. I believe there needs to be a timeline built in and a process built in. 10 years ago, when mandated mergers took place in this state, there was a bloodbath in a lot of places. Some very ugly local politics caused a great deal of damage. And I'm working in the merger maps, both which you have in front of me. The district with whom we're to merge is opposed to it. And so we see some real trouble ahead. And we believe deeply that, and Senator Cruz and I worked together on the 34, Yes, that bill.
Yeah, that bill.
Created the local service plan. I believe that this bill needs to include language such as similar to what I've given you there, that you go back, you create a new group and a new plan, and you start from scratch. It's not going to work taking two old plans and trying to merge them together. And the people who are here representing, you know, what they're going to lose are absolutely right. What we need to do in this process is create a new vision and a new whole and a new direction and move it forward. And that's going to take time. So my recommendation would be that a new local service plan be part of the intent and that you be given up to 3 years to do the pre-planning and up to 2 more years to do the rollout and make that change so that it's driven by a vision of what the new thing is rather than looking over your shoulder to what isn't here anymore. I would also suggest that Section 1, Paragraph 3 talks about the state superintendent designating administrative offices. I really think that ought to be driven by the local folks and the local service plan. That's kind of the point of the local service plan, is to make those kinds of decisions. And then between your Dash 1 and Dash 2, we're treated the same way in either one. However, under the Dash 2 model, we would hope there'd be enough time that we could go back and look at a Coos Curry, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine County single ESD, keeping in mind that the short road from Roseburg to Brookings is you go to Grants Pass, turn right, take a very narrow but beautiful road to California, turn right again, and you're in Brookings. So we think there may be some other
way to get there.
There are other ways to get there. That's the shortcut. We think there's more discussion to be had as this thing moves forward, and I guess that would be our only comment on that point. Thank you.
And thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hass, committee members. I know John because he was one of them that interviewed me when I was interviewing out at North Lake School, which you want to talk rural. We were an hour away from a grocery store. I agree with him about many of his points, and I'm
Kristen,
here to oppose. I'm sorry, I'm Kristen McCown. Thank you. I oppose Senate Bill 574 as well. I think my biggest concern as a speech-language therapist is that under the proposed plan for consolidation, direct services to our students, I think, would be greatly reduced. There's so much travel time involved, all that windshield time. Don't forget we have rural roads and cruddy road conditions. We have snow almost 9 months a year sometimes. You spend all that windshield time, you lose direct time with kids. That's just how it is. I've been an itinerant speech therapist before. I was required to spend lots of time on the road between sites, and it definitely impacted my services to kids. Instead of direct services where I was working with groups of kids, I provided a lot of consultation where you walk in and you check in with teachers, you offer a little bit of advice, interrupt the teacher's classroom and their teaching. You know, it doesn't always go over real well, and it's very, very troublesome. Furthermore, when you act as a consultant role, you struggle to become a part of that team for that school. You don't develop those relationships and that trust with staff and with parents, and it's just really, really difficult in that model. So in closing, I just want you to please consider the impact this bill would have on services to students in our most rural areas. I don't think that it would be effective or costly or cost-effective. Excuse me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is David Hicks. I'm with Jefferson County ESD. I'm falling on the sword and have nothing in front of me, so this will be very brief.
I'm just going to wing it.
Exactly. I serve as the IT coordinator for the Jefferson County ESD as well as the Jefferson County School District. Again, I'm in one of those dual roles, which certainly maximizes the efficiency as far as the monetary aspect. What I'd like to speak to the committee about is going to be the service aspect that is lost. In the information technology area for our ESD, we are the technology services. We are not consultants. We are the tech departments for our district. As you move to a larger model, you certainly go toward a consultative model. And in the larger ESDs that I've worked with, it is much more the departments provide connectivity and work with departments at each local district. Given that our districts don't have those departments, you're going to be imposing a rather strict monetary penalty to them as they have to try and hire someone to be the on-site technology group for their district. So I guess my largest piece of this discussion is that the service model by consolidating does not benefit our rural students in the least. And this certainly comes from my perspective in Jefferson County ESD, but I believe could certainly be applied to all rural areas. Given the distances, what you're really doing in consolidation is not so much streamlining and removing waste, but actually adding complexity and administration to a system that is not broken. It is already directly serving the students. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Mr. Hill, I would add that most of the timelines in here go to July of 2011, so it's not like we won't have in meeting in next session and the 2011 session some swings at this for tweaks or modifications.
Yes, yeah, but I'm more concerned about getting that planning process in there so that you're redefining your programs and services through that local service plan. That's a critical piece in my judgment.
Okay. And I have only one will testify from Wallowa North Central in Grant, ESDs. But
just start introduce yourselves, then I'll go over there.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Hass, Chairman, and other senators. I'm Robert Waltenberg with Grant County ESD. I'm the 10% superintendent and 90% tech guy. So.
I'm Ed Jensen. I'm the superintendent from Wallowa ESD.
Chair Hass and senators, I'm Mike Carroll from North Central ESD. Our written testimony was delivered to all of your offices yesterday, so hopefully you have had a chance to see that at least, if not completely go through it. We want to thank you for this opportunity to comment on this legislation and to express our justification for Amendment 1 in the map that is accompanying that. That is what basically we are most interested in testifying about today. I'm here to speak for all three ESDs in an effort to save your time and ours regarding that map that OESD presented to you. We're not really interested in merging, and we were one of the all of our ESDs did vote against it when the vote was taken as a straw vote. But we are willing to work with you, and as we have attended at some work sessions with Senator Hass and other members of the committee, and we are willing to look at a merger or work towards a merger with our three ESDs. And we think that there is some real good reason for that. We've agreed to do that because we have a working relationship right now that has been established and been used since 1992. We also feel that it makes sense for our three ESDs to merge because of the nature of our school districts and their size and the nature of our ESDs and the services that we do provide. Those are complementary to each other, and therefore it makes sense for us to continue to work together and to build on those things that we've already started. We would cordially invite any of you or your staff to make a visit to any of our ESDs, and we'd be glad to show you any of our process that you are interested in seeing or give you a tour of the geography that we are talking about and have to cover. We don't pretend to tell anyone or to know what it takes to provide services to large school districts or to a large ESD. But when you consider 51 years of accumulated experience in working as administrators in small school districts and small ESDs, we feel that we do have the expertise to give you some advice on what needs to happen in small ESDs. And that's why we are saying that we are justified in making this recommendation to you. A few examples of what we do that are specific maybe to us and from other testimony, maybe other small ESDs as well. We provide all of the technology infrastructure and the maintenance to our school districts for the technology part of things. We provide fiscal services. We all provide fiscal services, complete fiscal services for some of the school districts in our ESD. As far as curriculum goes, just one major point is and school improvement. One of our directors of school improvement has been the chairperson of the State Instructional Learning Council, which is a major player in moving forward with school improvement in Oregon. And in special ed, we provide direct service to students in the classroom, both through the teachers that work for the ESDs and instructional assistants that work for the ESDs. We look at the money that comes to us as an ESD as money that actually belongs to the schools, and we feel we have demonstrated and that our schools agree that we work to use that money to their benefit and to the benefit of their students. We have really struggled with the consistent use of the turn capacity as a reason that small ESDs should not exist. I have questioned numerous people. I've talked to or tried to get answers from ODE. I've talked to senators, and I have talked to large ESD superintendents who have used this word capacity. And I have yet to really get a definition for it, and I think that it is an important part of what seems to be the move that we are making, and it would really be helpful to everyone to be able to have a good, open, honest discussion and a definition of what capacity means so that we know where we are. We actually feel that we are meeting those things. We are showing that we have capacity. We are meeting what the state law asks us to do, and we are meeting what our component school districts ask us to do. And for us, that is a good definition of capacity. If we're meeting what state law expects and what our school district expects, I don't know what more we could do in the way of capacity. So, but if there is something more or if there is something different about capacity, we would really like the chance to have an open, honest discussion about it. A little bit off of that general topic is that we agree with a comment that's been made before. I think Mr. Hill made it, that we feel that the new ESD should be the ones to make the decision about where the offices, the main office, and any satellite offices that should be necessary for the functioning of any new ESDs that are made up by this merger. We realize that you have a very difficult job this year, and we thank you for taking the time to listen and to read to what we have put together for you, and that we are putting the fate of our children and the students in our districts in your hands, and leave it there. I just might, if I could answer just Senator Bonamici's question regarding Washington. Because that came up before, there is a North Central ESD in Washington, and my dad was a member of that board for 15 years. So I called the superintendent there and asked them, and then also asked the superintendent of the school district that I grew up in about the services. And basically, as Mr. Molitor mentioned, it's pretty much we put together and you pay for it. There are very few or little direct services. And it's basically the money that they get from the state pays for part of the superintendent's salary and maybe one of his assistants, and the rest of it's all that the districts pay them to provide that service. So that is a big difference, and I guess is partly why we feel like going to bigger ESDs with larger areas and larger numbers might lead us in that same direction where services have to be bought from the ESD rather than provided by the ESD. And again, thank you for the time.
Thank you. Questions? Gentlemen. Jerry Washington from Multnomah ESD.
Wow, all this space to myself? I should merge.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas and Senator committee members.
That was good.
My name is Jerry Washington. I'm a current board member of Multnomah ESD. I've been on the board since 1999, and I am currently the co-chair on the board side of OAESD, as well as co-chair of OAESD Legislative Committee. I'm here today because MESD board met last night, and we had a hearty, healthy conversation around Senate Bill 574. And as you know, or if you don't know, MESD provides services to 8 component school districts in Multnomah County. Our services are varied and respond to the various needs of the districts. We operate 3 alternative high schools. We manage the early intervention, early childhood special education program. We serve incarcerated youth and children in hospital, and we provide numerous other services, including IT and business services. Today, I want to address 2 of the issues outlined in Senate Bill 574. The first is a merger, and as you know, Senate Bill 964, which generated the very first, we call Senator Haas map, condensed ESDs from the bill indicates 21, but it's actually 20 to 9, which also included new configurations. And after the public hearings and OESD meeting with Senator Haas, with all that was looming overhead as far as reduction in funding and an option for larger districts to opt out, OESD took the challenge and took on the task of, within less than a week, coming up with a map that we thought would be less disruptive, which gives us map number 2, which ties into Senate Bill 574-1. However, in looking at these maps, however, there is no evidence that a positive outcome is likely in any case. Under Senate Bill 574, we have Senator Cruz's map. And I agree, Senator, this is beautiful. The colors are just great. But, again, is this better? Who knows? Probably a lot of folks can go get together and create a map that's colorful, balances the population, looks at the ADM. But what we're looking for is efficiencies. We're looking for a way that meets the needs and provides the services to the students that they so richly deserve. Therefore, Senate Bill to Multnomah ESD might have been acceptable. Acceptable only if it was the only issue in the bill. Better yet, as we see it, if it was the only issue in the bill, we look at what is already in existence, EESC, which is Education Enterprise Steering Committee, as a place to start aligning not only the services that ESD provides, but Oregon Department of Education as well. This committee was created specifically to address the issues of ESDs. So why not give them the charge of creating what we've heard so often, and I love hearing it from you, Senator Cruz, looking at all of the alignment that includes a higher ed in each of the component districts, each of the zones, and a larger school. And so that is a recommendation that comes from Multnomah ESD. And bottom line, we did vote to support the 574-1, standing with our OAESD members. The second issue we want to talk about is governance. Bottom line, Ozzie said well, better than I think as an organization could say it together, and that is, we support Senate Bill 41. A lot of hard work went into that pilot. And so, as you know, that gives us that option of staying status quo or using the pilot model. Even more so, Senate Bill has already been passed out of the committee and by the Senate and was consistent with OAESD position, which allows, again, the ESD to keep their system and others to keep the direct election model. It further provides that ESDs can choose to change governance models, and that constitutes school districts the ability to force alternative models if they so choose. So, why are we changing? Again, in closing, what I'd like to say, and I think this will summarize why I asked that question, is our mission as ESDs is to serve our kids. And in this unpredicted, troubled times, our kids need and deserve 100% of our attention. Therefore, it makes no sense to require ESDs during these most serious fiscal situations in our lifetime to spend time and resources on forced mergers and revised governance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from Ms. Washington? Thank you so much. Tricia Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing me so late in the day. I will be very brief in consideration for your time. I'm Tricia Smith, representing Oregon School Employees Association, and we are here today in opposition to both the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments to this bill. I'm sorry.
It's a pretty map, though.
It's a beautiful map. Okay. It's beautiful. Well, I like the colors of all of them, frankly. We agree with the concerns that have already been described to you about the governance model and the forced merger that's included in this bill. We do not believe that either of these things will improve services to children or make it easier for the employees of ESDs to provide for those services. I would like, we also agree with the concern about the inability of any merged ESD and the component school districts to develop service plans prior to merger so all the districts know what it is they're doing before it's done to them. But most particularly, I would like to draw your attention to Section 9 of either of the amendments, which deals with employees. This section says fairly simply that employees of component districts that come into a merged district are, if they continue to survive in that merged district, they will be employees of the merged district. The new merged district will be the successor in the contracts that exist for those employees, and that any seniority that employees have amassed in their previous employer with their previous employer would transfer to the new ESD. All of that is fine. That's great, but there's a whole lot more to it than that. For employees, there is more to the benefits that they may have accrued in their jobs than seniority, for example, and it also includes sick leave. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. There is more than sick leave. They have accrued vacation leave. They have chosen particular health insurance and other benefit plans, and those may not transfer from one to the other. The vacation would not under this amendment. There are considerations in how their employer handles their PERS retirement accounts, whether or not they do an employer pickup of the individual account program contribution or the employee does. That's not addressed in this bill. And another very significant issue that is not addressed in this bill is I've not had the time to count the number of different bargaining units there are in these merged ESDs, but there are at least 5 unions involved in them. And many of them, or some of them at least, will be in conflict in these new merged districts. And we suggest that we would like to have some opportunity to figure out what to do about that before it's forced on us with this bill. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tricia, I'm trying to figure out, in Section 9 that you pointed out, because it expressly says the seniority will be transferred, but it doesn't say that the vacation won't be transferred. Is that an interpretation, or is that what you understand the intent to be of the drafting?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, I have no idea what the intent is of the drafter. I know that vacation is absent from the bill.
Thank you.
If you're specific on seniority, but not specific on the draft.
Thank you.
I don't know.
I have Mickey Killingsworth signed up.
I'm not a lawyer.
I will be very brief. For the record, I'm Mickey Killingsworth. I'm the chief GED examiner for Jefferson County ESD, which is very part-time. Twice a month, I test students that need GEDs. But I'm a shepherd. I'm a farmer. That's how I make my living most of the time.
You don't get many shepherds in promise.
No, you don't.
Thank you.
And I promise I will not fleece you or pull the wool over your eyes today. For the record, I am opposed to Senate Bill 574. I really am probably the least knowledgeable of the people who have testified, but last week, several of us from Jefferson County were over here, and we went on an education fact-finding mission, and we learned lots, or I learned lots. So bottom line, you've heard everybody who's testified, and I'm not going to repeat anybody's testimony. The big elephant in the room is funding, as you guys know, and I'm glad I'm a shepherd, and I'm I just have to figure out how to buy $240 a ton hay and not how to fund schools and ESDs. When we were over here last week, we talked about funding with the Senate President, Courtney, with Senator Devlin, and with Senator Monroe. And we were told it would probably be very remiss if ESDs did not face reality and realize that their budgets would not remain at the current funding level. So our group of people, which you heard from part of them today earlier, said, we live in the real world. We're a rural ESD. Our superintendent of our ESD has already put in place a very rigid budget to make sure we try to have at least a 15% little cushion in there for whatever surprises may come out, and which is the reality you people will be making in the next 60 days approximately. So for all practical reasons, as people have said, maybe this isn't the time. And I understand 14 years or how many years of doing ESDs, but I do like the business model. I'm a farmer by heart. I make business model decisions all the time. So if some sheep needs cold, fine. If an ESD, a school district, wants to opt out or needs cold, those things need to be looked at. But Jefferson County ESD is very lean, very efficient. As you can tell, we're very proud of our services we provide to the students and the families in Jefferson County and also Wasco County, because that's part of the Warm Springs Reservation. So I would recommend, I have a degree in economics, so I really like business plans, but I would challenge everybody to look at 537 Senate Bill. You have that's going in work session, maybe today, maybe not. It's a long day for you. You in that, it talks about basically business plans. And it's going to land it be a voluntary audit. Maybe what everybody needs to consider is passing Senate Bill 537, and instead of making a voluntary audit, make it a mandatory audit, and it comes out of their funding that the ESDs have. And then you will have a database to look at to evaluate everybody and see which ESDs are bloated, which ESDs are lean and providing services, and then there will be some place to start with. That's all I have to say. Are there any questions, Chair Haas or committee members?
Questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz.
Are you expecting the price of hay to go down this year?
well, I hope so, but...
I sell hay, which is why I'm asking.
Yes, Senator Cruz, Chair Haas. Yes, hay is predicted to go down, but I'm not sure your inputs are going to go down, and I'm not sure your profit margin's going to go up.
That's true.
So.
Thank you.
And, committee, you have a letter from the superintendent, Susan Castillo, supporting this concept, and Morgan Allen is here from ODA. Did you want to testify, Morgan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. I'll keep this very brief. You do have a copy of a letter of support from Superintendent Castillo supporting the consolidation, and she appreciates all the work that OESD and their members have put into the MAP. I think we generally support the MAP and the Dash 1 amendment. One other important element I'd like to point out in the letter is I think there's been a lot of talk this session about the funding level that ESDs receive, the current 4.75% of the state school fund, and the superintendent included in her letter that that she does not believe that funding formula should change, that the consolidation is a good first step to move along, and we shouldn't be looking at reducing funding for ESDs during this biennium. Have some more written testimony. We have some ideas for some things that we think will make the bill stronger, but we can work on those down in Ways and Means, and we would just urge the committee to adopt the Dash 1 amendments and iron out the wrinkles as we move the bill through the process. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, we are in a public hearing work session.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I think we actually just opened a public hearing.
Okay. And let me close the public hearing on Senate Bill 574 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 574. My mistake. You're right.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonavici?
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes.
I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 574.
Senator Bonavici moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bills 574. Any discussion? Seeing none? So ordered. Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on Senate Bill 574 without fiscal and revenue statements being available for review.
Senator Bonamici requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended for the purposes of voting on Senate Bill 574 without fiscal and revenue statements being available for review. Any discussion?
I object.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that this bill is being referred to Ways and Means, is that
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you have to have unanimous consent to suspend the rules, and I'm objecting.
Could we recess for just a minute?
That's a good idea, Senator.
Okay, we'll take a temporary recess.
The caucus has agreed to this.
I'm sure that by Monday you could get the statements, so if I thought the fiscal wouldn't show up by Tuesday, I'd stay with my objection, but I'm sure you can make that happen, so I'll withdraw my objection.
Okay. Senator Bonamici?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 574 as amended to the floor with the DUPAS recommendation and recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Bonamici moves Senate Bill 574 as amended to the floor with the DUPAS recommendation and recommend that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Seeing none.
No, yes,
there is. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I will be a no, but I also want to applaud your efforts. You know, the objective of creating better service, greater efficiency, and a better system of ESDs is applauded. The issue that I have had and we have communicated about is I believe the amendments focus on form instead of functions. And I think a process that focuses on functions that will increase service and increase efficiencies and then report back in the vernacular that Senator Cruz used, a business plan essentially, as to how we're going to achieve those. It might look much different than what this bill does in the configuration of these of this map that we're adopting. So I applaud the objective, but I'm troubled with the process. So for that reason, Mr. Chair, I will be a no.
I appreciate that, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I've told you all session, Mr. Chair, I'm not necessarily opposed to your objective. It's just the way we get there. And on what Senator Morris was saying, I've viewed ESDs as we move into the 21st century as being a conduit for a lot of new enterprises in the education continuum. And I just don't think that we have had the time to do the real work necessary to determine what those enterprises are and the best way to deliver those services. And I'm also concerned that, and it may not happen, that giving the Department of Ed the authority over some of the functionality inside the ESD. In my vision, no matter what map you draw or how it looks like, a field office is still going to be where it is, because it has to be. It's just a matter of logistics more than anything else. And my fear is that maybe some of those things may be altered, not based on on the service delivery, which at the end of the day is the core function. And you know, there's a lot of the new possibilities of the way we deliver education are staggering to me. And the accountability levels that we are being tasked with by the feds more than anybody else are also very staggering. And there's a good staggering and a bad staggering here. And I just wish we had the time to make sure that we were going to do whatever we do based on a more comprehensive look at what the business plan for the 21st century should look like.
Well, I thank you both for those kind comments. I think those are about the kindest no vote explanations I've ever heard, but I do thank you for engaging and taking part of this process. I think most of the ESD Association members know how I got here, and that was at the beginning of the session when some of the leaders of the Ways and Means Committee were talking about how in the world we're going to make up these billions of dollars. There seemed to be a consensus that one easy place to go was a dramatic cut in the ESD formula, and without doing anything else. And I thought that there is a much more thoughtful way to do that than to reduce the formula by essentially half, which was a figure that was bandied about. And so I think this, and not changing the formula, is a better way to get where some of them go, and I think it's more responsible. So that's how I got there. We're not by any means finished with this bill yet. It's just going in from this committee to another. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to applaud your efforts on this and also the efforts of others on the committee, Senator Cruz and others who have spent way more time on this issue than I have. And I do appreciate from my time on the committee and listening to the discussions that this is the type of issue where no matter how hard we work, no matter how much time we put into this, we're never going to make everybody happy. That's just the nature of the type of
of bill this is and the type of effort that, in especially in difficult times, that we need to undertake. I want to make a comment that, as you said, this is going on to another committee. I would like to get some clarification about the intent, particularly to address the concerns raised by the OSCA about I'm trying to dig back into my brain on the rules of statutory interpretation to figure out if the fact that one item is mentioned and the others aren't, is that read as excluding that those particular benefits would transfer. So I would appreciate clarification of that as this particular bill moves on. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for all your work.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I'll applaud you, too. I just don't want you to be left
out.
I
was waiting for that. Yeah,
okay. That's all I have.
Are you a no also?
No, I'm an applauding yes.
The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
No.
Chair Hatch?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is recommended for referral to the Senate President's desk for consideration to be sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you all for engaging with us on this. Committee, we have two short items to tend to, and one is at the request of Senator Winters, who I assured her didn't need to be here because we would do it.
It's 671.
671, and but we also have. I want to open up a quick public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 560. Alex Kyler is here from Lane County. Most of you have seen this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of committee, Senate Bill 560 permits the dissolution of a county service district if it is no longer necessary for the purpose for which it was formed.
Tyler.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you very much for considering this bill. It is a relatively short change to statute and deals with the enables counties to consider administratively dissolving county service districts. Typically, the only path available to counties right now to dissolve a service district is through election. Elections for service districts, which can be large, can be expensive. In Lane County's case, we're looking at approximately a $60,000 election, and as a result, this service district sort of just keeps hanging around. There's typically an annual meeting of the Board of County Commissioners and the Budget Committee for the service district, and they review how much money they have in the bank and gavel it shut. So as a result, these things, like I said, sort of sit around. We've got our county service district that the commissioners would like to at least be able to consider dissolving administratively has $27,000 in the bank, so it's not enough money to cover the cost of the election. And the bill states that a county service district could be dissolved if it has fulfilled its initial purpose. I gave you some previous information about what that means in terms. It's not a situation where a board of county commissioners can capriciously dissolve a district. They do have to go through a process to make sure that it has fulfilled its initial purpose. The purpose has to be memorialized in a resolution creating the thing. So they've got that document to go back to, and there is some process they have to go through to make that available for public comment and do some other review. So it's not the case where a county may be able to say, well, we don't like the operators of that thing anymore, and we're going to turn it off. This is ones that have been hanging around. Lane County has one. Clatsop County has one. I learned today that Benton County thinks they may have one. They've got one that they're sort of trying to figure out what to do with. And so this is just a very minor change, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have on the county service district.
Thank you. What would happen to the $27,000?
The $27,000
or monies in
yeah any money is that process is let's see included is an accounting of indebtedness related to bonds or uncollected taxes, a description of a real property owned by the district, the estimated cost for dissolution, and a plan for dissolution and liquidation. I know it's not given to, the commissioner's favorite charity or anything like that. I think I think it stays within the public realm, or it's...
Well, we could use some up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
when we sweep that in exchange for passing.
That was a joke, right?
That was a joke. Well,
for the record.
Well,
may not be before we're done.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Metzger.
Alex, I have a question. This is fine. We talked about it. I'm supportive of that. But it does make me wonder if going forward, say counties create these limited term, especially ones that are for limited term purposes, maybe when they create them, they should create a sunset provision so it automatically goes.
That exists, excuse me, Chair Haas and Senator Metzger. That does exist in statute right now. So if you form the thing knowing that it's going to dissolve at a certain time, you do not need to do the election.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in our case, there was, I wasn't around when it was, I wasn't involved when it was created in 1978, but I think there was some uncertainty about what would happen to this thing in its future and exactly when it would pay off its bonds. In the case of Benton County, you can do a few things with a wastewater district. You can change it to a drainage district. So there's a few options that you can do with a district. But your statement is correct, and that does exist in statute today. If you plan for dissolution, you do not need to dissolve it through an election.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other questions? I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 560 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 560.
Mr. Chair, I move 560 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 560 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
We don't need an interim work group for this one, Mr. Chair.
Work group.
Well, it's service districts.
It's got two of the three words.
Yeah.
Seeing none, is there any objection to sending Senate Bill 560 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered.
Let's let Senator Przanski do this. He's from Lane County, and this was your judiciary bill originally. So he's the one
that
introduced
it.
I think, well, I appreciate that. I talked to him about this. Senator Morris is closer. Both of your counties, your districts, border Lane County. Do you have Lane County at all in your district?
No, I do not.
And you're geographically
No, I'm Benton, Lane County.
Closest.
Yeah.
Would you mind carrying this bill, Senator Morris?
Oh, I'd be delighted to.
Okay.
Actually, technically, we're part of the state of Jefferson, where I live.
Anything that makes government work better, I'm all for it.
I thought that. I thought that before.
I thought you were going to negotiate it.
And the Jackie Winters bill is...
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 671.
We're open up a work
session. Close the work session. We just
close the work session on Senate Bill 560. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 671. There is an amendment.
There are two amendments, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 671 has to do with the Capital Planning Commission. It would reestablish that commission. The -3 amendments were brought forward by Senator Metzger with an eye toward cooperation with the State Capital Foundation. And the -5 amendments were put together on behalf of Senator Winters, providing some clarifying language with regard to staffing the commission, to collaboration with neighborhood associations, to including consultation with the State Parks and Recreation Department. And that is what is there, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so ideally, 3 and 5 are both needed as far as the co-sponsors are concerned, and that we would send that over to Ways and Means. Senator Metzger, did you want to talk about your amendment?
Only briefly, it's just notes that I had made during our hearing where the transit district wanted to be mentioned, where the foundation needed to be included, and we heard from neighborhood associations that if they make changes, that be sure they notify the neighborhood associations. So I just put those elements in the bill to recognize the concerns that were brought forward, and the sponsor agreed with those.
Okay. Then I will look for a motion.
Well, Mr. Chair, with respect to the motion, I'm willing to make a motion to refer to Ways and Means, but adding back the commission in this environment, I would actually feel more comfortable making a motion to refer to Ways and Means without recommendation, because of just the very nature of building back something at the same time. I mean, we did eliminate this. I don't question
the merit of it. I question
the timing of it.
So it's your pleasure, Mr. Chair.
I think you could amend the notes there to do as you like. We'll adopt
Once
the amendments.
Okay.
In the motion.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of -3 amendment to
Senate
Bill
671. To adopt the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 61. Discussion? Seeing none. 671. Discussion? Seeing none.
Just a quick question. Did you do both of the amendments?
Yeah.
I'm just
doing one, and then I'll do the next one.
Is there objection? Not that the -3 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 671.
Senator Morse moves to adopt the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 671. Is there discussion? If not, the -5 amendments are adopted.
And we're not, Mr. Chair, we're not doing anything with the -1s. Correct. Okay.
I'm sorry. I should indicate that those are included in the fives. Aren't the ones the State Parks and Recreation Department?
Yes.
They are covered in the fives.
Thank you. Just checking. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici. Okay.
Which way would you like to refer this, Mr.
I'm comfortable, if the rest of the committee is, with just a straight recommendation.
Fair recommendation. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 671 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. That's different than...
I thought you were going to do it without recommendation.
Well, I would like to do it without recommendation.
No. That's fine. I'm comfortable with that. I'm sorry.
May I amend the motion, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Does that take unanimous consent? I just don't know.
Well, he can withdraw the motion by himself.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 671 as amended to the floor without recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Morse moves Senate Bill 671 as amended to the floor without recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. They're not denying the merit of it. I'd just like to point out the history that in 2003, when we were in a recession, as a cost-saving measure, we eliminated this commission, and now in 2009 we're in a depression. We're adding it back in. That seems counterintuitive to me, so I'll be voting no.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Morse?
Aye.
Chair Haas?
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and
without recommendation.
Let's close the work session on Senate Bill 671, and we will carry over the remainder bills that we have here, including Senate Bill 43. And
Chair,
652, 537, and 637, which are all carried over. Thank you all for your patience, committee. And next week we go to lighter loads. We are adjourned.